Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. I'm one of your hosts, Yucca.
And I'm the other one, Mark.
And today we are talking about the body. Our bodies, what bodies are, our relationship to them, and how that ties into our paganism.
Right. One of the things that is often used as a distinction between paganism and many of the other larger religions is that we are an embodied religion. We are about the materiality of Earth and ourselves and the biotic kingdom, all of which is physical, right? Mm-hmm. It's all made up of material stuff.
Yep. And most of us aren't trying to ascend to a higher plane or any of that kind of stuff.
Well, there are a lot of people in the pagan community who, for example, believe in a soul or a spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they believe that that may carry on through a reincarnation process or something like that. As non-theist pagans, we, and science-based pagans, we don't really buy that. We don't see any evidence for it. What we see evidence for is that there is no distinction between the body and the self or the mind. We are thinking meat, and it's the meat that does the thinking. Mm-hmm. So our bodies are ourselves. And in order to fully live in the experience of being human in this world, we have to embrace the physicality of ourselves and not think of that as distinct or separate from the real self that the overculture tells us is like some ghost in the machine.
Yeah. And this can be tricky because we were just before hitting the record, we were talking about how so much of our language is shaped by the cultures that we are around and the religions that influence the larger culture. And so we'll often end up using words and expressions that don't reflect what we really believe. Like, right. Oh, well, this is the body I'm in, right? That expression implies that the I is separate from this body and that I'm just in it. Like you were right. Saying, the ghost in the machine that I'm just driving this body around rather than seeing, wait, this body is me. My yes. mind is an expression it's created from, it's emergent from this body.
Right.
And it's right. not a different thing. It's part of it.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
There are technical terms for those two different worldviews, and they are dualism and monism. And dualism was advanced as a model. I mean, it's been believed for many, many centuries, but it philosophically, it was advanced as a model by René Descartes mm-hmm. with his famous, I think, therefore I am. He was willing to extend that the fact that he was thinking meant that he had existence, but he wasn't willing to go quite so far as to say that his body was a part of that thinking process, which we have since learned it is. It is indeed, to the degree that we now are able to identify particular little synapses that encode particular meanings for us, particular words. It's not a precise process by any means, but there has been enough research to demonstrate that the thinking is, as you said, an emergent property of the brain and of the nervous system. And what that means is that we are our bodies. The sum total of everything we are is our bodies. Mm. That is a view called monism, which as opposed to dualism, which is the idea that the body and the mind or spirit or soul or something are separate and that one could exist without the other. And as you say, we use so much language. Even to say my body makes no sense because really what we should be saying is I.
Mm-hmm.
I do this, you know, yeah. I I kick my legs. I don't respond well to bell peppers. I need insulin. Whatever it is, it's not my body needs this. It's I need this, because there's no difference between the self and the body.
Yeah.
And this is important. It's not just important from the philosophical standpoint of, you know, taking a good hard look at the evidence and understanding that it's unlikely that there's something like a soul or a spirit. It's important because in the traditional religions throughout the world, the idea has been that this ephemeral spark, this spirit or soul or whatever it is much more important than the body.
Mm-hmm.
And as pagans, we really reject that.
Yeah. And on the one hand, I can understand the appeal of it, right? There's mm-hmm. something comforting. If I am not my body, if something happens to my body, well, that's okay. Then I still get this afterlife or, mm-hmm. you know, it's any of those things. But it also sets up an opportunity to excuse the conditions that the person is living in that moment.
Yes.
Right. So don't worry. You can not have enough food. You can be miserable now, but don't worry. Your soul will go on, or your mind will go on. It's okay. We can hurt your body because that's not you.
Right. As the Woody Guthrie song says, you'll have pie in the sky when you die. And that rationalization has been used to create a great deal of horror. Entire wars have been fought on the idea that slaughtering all these people is good for them because it frees their souls for God. Horrible tortures have been inflicted because, you know, we're saving their souls because, you know, as long as they repent at the end, then God will give them a gold star and, you know, send them on into paradise. It's a pernicious view. And the embracing of physicality of the body has tremendous implications, not only for in those kind of extreme cases, but just in how we live our lives.
How we relate to our own selves.
Yes, yes. And it's very hard to pry yourself away from a culture which has crazy relationships with food, and with body image and body shapes and aging and all those kinds of things. There are just so many layers mm-hmm. of opportunities for self-loathing and therefore for somebody to sell you a product in the world that we live in today. And what we can offer as science-based pagans is a glimpse maybe of how to escape that.
Mm-hmm.
A glimpse of a world in which we simply embrace ourselves as being these physical beings in a physical world. And we say, that's great. And I love me. Therefore, I love my body, whatever its shape, whatever its ability, whatever its condition. And therefore, I can move forward in the world with confidence.
Yeah. And from there, the relationship that we have with ourselves, with that confidence, that then has an impact on how we are perceived and how others then treat us in turn.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's a funny thing. Confidence is this very ephemeral sort of quality. We know it when we see it. And when it's, we can tell when it's real confidence versus sort of arrogance rooted in insecurity, we can really tell the difference. We can smell it. And confidence has a tremendous bearing on how other people view it. I have this story from when I lived in Spain, in Barcelona. And it's kind of a cute, funny story. I had been in the city for 8 months or so and had been struggling to learn the language and very lonely. Other than a couple of English-speaking expatriates, I didn't really know anyone. But I met this woman at a an expatriates get together, and we decided to go on a date. So I'm on this train to headed towards this date. Mm-hmm. And I'm filled with a sense of being attractive and being confident and being excited about the date and all this kind of stuff. And this woman, and I'm in an empty train car. Woman gets on the train, beautiful woman, sits in the seat directly opposite me of all of the seats in the entire train, and does this sort of flirty eye contact thing with me for the entire time until I get off the train, and then says goodnight to me on my way out. And it was clear that she was very attracted to me. And the only real difference between that day and the day before was that I was filled with brimming with all this confidence and feeling attractive and all that good kind of stuff. And I remember that there was this sort of anthropological part of myself that was really fascinated by this exchange. I've always remembered the story. So that is a thing. If we feel good about ourselves, and by selves, we mean the totality of ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. That in, you know, the body and the thinking and feeling that the body creates, it draws others to us. It's that ephemeral quality of charisma that nobody can quite define.
Yeah. And I love that you pointed out that it's authentic confidence, mm-hmm. not being cocky or, you know, arrogant or anything like that. But in your story, it sounds like you really were feeling that about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I really was. And I hadn't been for a long time. And I think that's probably why the story sticks out in my mind, because the contrast was so great from the sort of invisibility that I had been feeling and loneliness that I'd been feeling for a long time. That evening, I wasn't invisible and I wasn't lonely. And there was this lovely woman who wanted me to come and go on a date with her. So I was feeling great.
So one thing to mention as well in all of this is when we talk about the having confidence in our bodies and all of that, we're not saying to not acknowledge places where there is hurt, where we are unhealthy, but to try not to hate those or loathe those parts, but recognizing that that's part of just who we are and where we're at right now.
Right. And there is a big difference between having a body shape that isn't the socially sanctioned stereotypical body type.
Which, by the way, doesn't actually exist.
No, it doesn't. Like it really doesn't exist. But there's a difference between feeling like you're supposed to lose 30 pounds in order to try to approach that model, mm-hmm. and deciding that you want to lose some weight for health purposes because it's been recommended to you by your physician that it could probably benefit you if you lost a little weight. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference between the two. One of them happens out of love for yourself, and the other happens out of a distaste for how your current body is. And all bodies change. That's part of the deal with aging. Bodies change. Mm-hmm. And at some level, it helps us a great deal to be able simply to accept the fact that our bodies do change over time, and that's just part of the ride.
And that there really are different body types, not just body compositions, right? Like, but literal body types of really how wide are your shoulders? Where is the weight going to be carried on your body or not? What is the mm-hmm. shape of your face? How long are your legs or not? Those are just things that there are differences between people. And mm-hmm. sure, you could dress a certain way to make maybe your shoulders seem wider or not, but that's just the way your body is.
Yes. Yes. And so if we get away from the idea of trying to fit ourselves to some conventional standard of attractiveness, and instead dress the way that makes us feel good, mm-hmm. we probably get a lot further in terms of others finding us interesting to look at and attractive and so forth. Maybe not everyone, but some people are shallow. Let's face it. You know, some people are simply, you know, they're looking for that ideal and they're just going to sum people up based on how their body parts look. And, you know, you probably have better things to do with your time than to deal with those folks.
Yeah. Well, certainly when you're in the realm of dating, that's, you probably don't want to.
Yeah.
That's probably not a great person for you to be with anyways.
No.
It starts to get more complicated when you get into the world of trying to have a job or, you know, what your landlord's impression about you is or things like that. And the unfair double standards of our world mm-hmm. when it comes to different genders and different ages and different races. And there's so much to all of that. But I think that there really is value in coming back to setting all of that aside, which some of that is external stuff that, you know, I'm never going to be able to control what my neighbor thinks about a woman or not. Right. But I do control, or at least strongly influence, what I think about me.
Yes. Yes. And at the core of much of what sort of, for want of a better term, magical practice is about self-possession. It's about owning yourself and really knowing yourself and drawing on the wellsprings of knowledge and will and energy and power. And I mean energy in a literal sense, like, mm-hmm. you know, the energy that powers our body, in order to focus our minds and change our consciousness. And you can't really do that terribly well if you don't own yourself, which is your body. Even if you think that you live up in your head all the time, the rest of your body is functioning. It's doing stuff. It might be good to check in with that.
Yeah. And rewarding too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right?
Not just on a should, it should, it'll be better for you, but on a just coming back to, you know, what does it feel like to be alive? What's it feel like to be you?
Right.
And when we're coming at it from the perspective of, hey, I am my body, there does come the realization with that, well, this body's not going to be around for very long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, longer than the crickets, but really, you know, a century, if you're real, real lucky, actually isn't that long.
No.
Right. And so here I am, and I'd like to make the best of it and enjoy it as much as I can and be as aware and present as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we come back to those principles again and again, being paying attention, being aware, being present, being kind, being, you know, living in accordance with those principles that we talked about in a few episodes a while back. Because, not because you should, but because it's actually a path towards a way of living that we can be really proud of and really happy in. And that's kind of the point of the game, isn't it? When you're lying on your deathbed, what do you want to feel? You want to feel that you had a wonderful time and that you're proud of your works, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's about all of us can take with us in our last moments.
Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead.
And for many of us have loved ones who we want to be able to be there for and to take care of those people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a little cliche to say, but it's so true that you can't take care of someone else without first taking care of yourself.
Yes.
I think about on the airplanes, right? They always tell you to put, when the oxygen masks pop down, which I've never been on a flight that's happened on, thankfully. But if it does, you're supposed to always secure your own mask first.
Right.
So that you can then help someone else out, because you're not going to be any help if you pass out.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So the magic that we do in the world, if we're going to speak in those terms, the effect that we have in the world starts with the self.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that we should be, you know, narcissistic and self-obsessed and all that kind of stuff, but we should have a healthy respect for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And a real love for who and what we are. And who and what we are is our physical bodies thinking. It's a meat machine, and the meat does the thinking. So mm-hmm. love the meat, because if you love yourself, if you love your mind and your philosophies and your way of being, and I certainly hope you do, because self-love is so important for happiness and for effectiveness in the world. Then, you know, the meat is an integral part of the package. you don't get, it's not a cafeteria. You don't get to pick and choose what parts of yourself you love. It's got to be the whole deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we had talked about the possibility of what are some things that people who feel like they're not very well connected with their bodies can do.
Or even those who are, but want to continue to cultivate that and nourish that.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. like so many things, this is practice.
Right.
It's not, you don't flip a switch and aha, you got it now. Right. It's a continual choice day after day, week right. after week, year after year.
And the one thing that comes to mind to me immediately is swimming.
Hmm.
And the reason for that is that when you're in water, you have a constant stimulation happening all over your body. Your physicality is becoming much more visible to the rest of your brain, because it's constantly getting these reports of, hey, there's this substance touching us all over.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also, because gravity is your buoyancy reduces the effect of gravity, you can move around. And moving around in water is a whole body experience, at least for most people it is. It's a mm-hmm. whole body activity. So I think getting in water, and I mean, I know if you don't have much upholstery like me, it can be cold. So I like to go swimming in places that are really warm. But I think it's a good opportunity. I mean, one of the things that I remember very fondly about snorkeling in Hawaii in the warm water is not only the amazing fish and coral and turtles and just miracle world down there, but also just the feeling of really being connected with my physicality and using that to motor around the world.
Hmm.
Whereas I don't notice that so much when I'm walking, because I'm so accustomed to it.
Mm-hmm. And although you might not want to try this while snorkeling, but you know, when you're in a pool or you don't have the snorkel, you can do flips and turns and things that most of us stop doing when we're about 9 on right. ground, right?
Right?
Because then my bones aren't so bendy anymore. It starts to hurt when I fall. But in the water, there's that freedom that you have.
Yes. Yes. Mm. Very sensual experience and it's just a lovely one. It doesn't surprise me that swimming pools are kind of a ubiquitous thing, that we have them all over the place and people want to go in water.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, building on that idea, there may be things that work in different people's lives where it helps to achieve some of that same idea that you're talking about, the getting all of that, the stimulus everywhere on your body. And it might be other physical activities, maybe a bath, right?
Mm-hmm.
Coming back to the water idea. And that one is a lovely one that comes up time and time again when we start thinking about things like self-care and you know, there's the classic image of the bubble bath with the glass of wine and the rose petals and all of that.
The candles,
right? But for just that tuning in with yourself, and at the same time, creating a space that's separate from everything else that's going on, right? Mm-hmm. Bringing that, the sense into yourself, just starting to maybe just do a check-in with you, starting wherever you want, maybe from your toes, moving up through your body, and just kind of feeling, oh yeah, I've got muscles there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, that's me, right?
Yeah. And I think those kinds of experiences can go a long way towards building a sense of wholeness between the thinky self and the more muscular moving self. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, we can have improvements to our sense of body image by building that sense of common cause. Mm-hmm. With our physicality. I mean, everybody in the overculture, everybody certainly in the societies that I'm familiar with, is subject to this onslaught of imagery about what they're supposed to look like and how their body is supposed to work. And it's very harmful, because not only does it undermine people's sense of joy in being who they are, but there's a point at which people cross a line where they're far enough out of compliance with that projected image of what they're supposed to look like, that they kind of give up on themselves to some degree,
mm-hmm.
I think. And that's just a terrible waste for people to go through an experience like that. There's no reason for it. I mean, there are magnificent, incredible people who are fat. There are magnificent, incredible people who are in wheelchairs. There are magnificent, incredible people who have all different kinds of conditions and shapes, mm-hmm. and appearances. And the idea that we should be measuring ourselves by this visual bit is just, as I said, it's really pernicious.
Yeah.
If I could wave a magic wand, of which I have several, but it doesn't really do anything.
One of the other places that I think we have a lot of influence or opportunity is in our self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
So being mindful that our self-talk is, it can go either way. We can really drag ourselves through the mud and degrade ourselves, and we believe ourselves. That's mm-hmm. the thing. We really believe what we tell ourselves on some very, very deep level. And so when our messages, when we see ourselves in the mirror, my eyes are so asymmetrical, or I've got blackheads, or, you know, I'm not in my 30s, why do I still have acne, or whatever it is, that is what we hear. And that's mm-hmm. what we start to believe about ourselves. But pointing out the positive things to ourselves, using kind words when we speak to ourselves, you know, all of those things really change the whole feel of our day, change what we hear and what we believe.
Yes. Yes, because that internal dialogue is a reflection of what we believe. Mm-hmm. And if we change the dialogue, we'll change our beliefs. Really encourage people to go back into the archives to listen to the piece on the critic voice
mm-hmm.
that we did for some kind of details on this. The critic voice, of course, undermines our power, and it makes it harder for us to achieve what we want to or need to in the world. And one of the primary ways that the critic voice will get at you is by criticizing the body. It's kind of dumb when you think about it, that of all the things that it's going to criticize you about, that's what it's really going to zap you with. But the table has been set by the overculture. You know, we've all been primed to be afraid that there's something wrong with the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes advantage wherever it can.
Yeah. So what are some other things that people can do? We've been talking about just experiencing the body, getting in tune with it,
mm-hmm.
minding our internal dialogue, maybe some of our external dialogue as well, right? When at the beginning we talked about how the way that we speak often enforces that idea of separation between mind and body and self and soul and all of that.
Yes.
Anything else that comes to mind for you, Mark?
And particularly for people who feel very disconnected from their physicality, I think massage is a great thing because it's all about self-care. It's all about, you know, providing something pleasurable and supportive to your physical self. At one time or another, pretty much all parts of your body will be handled. So there will be that physical feedback back to your brain that, yes, those things that you see out there that you get a visual report from once in a while, those are your feet and they really exist. They're actually there. And I joke about this, but it's kind of true, you know, especially as we get older and creakier and it gets harder and harder to reach our feet because we're just stiffer than we used to be. Those parts of the body can sort of fade in significance in how we relate to them. That's certainly been my experience. And so I work pretty hard to flex my feet all the time and pay attention to them. And, you know, for some reason, the farther you get from my head, the less real my body seems to me. Mm-hmm. So I have to work to make sure that my full physicality is embraced by my understanding of myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And, you know, it's because most of our sensory organs are on the front of our head, right? Or on the sides of our head.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very visual animals to begin with. So, yes, the feet are a long way away unless I try to bring them closer, which is a painful process. But I can do it if it's really important to me.
Well, and our culture has become more and more sedentary over time.
Yes, that's true, okay. Too.
And then specifically with the feet, we essentially bind them for most of our lives and separate them from that tactile experience where our hands, we're touching things with our hands all the time, but our feet are bound up and put inside of these cushiony things that, you know, we really don't feel very much with them anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't mention it because it's very difficult for me for two reasons. One of which is that I have foot issues that make going barefoot very painful for me unless it's on a really soft surface like sand or grass. Mm-hmm. But I'm also allergic to cut grass.
Oh.
And so my skin breaks out. Mm-hmm. So going barefoot on grass isn't
very that,
fun for me.
That particular allergy before.
Yeah, I used to think that I was allergic to chlorophyll, but that's not it. It's something in cut grass. And ever since I was a little kid, if I lie on, you know, cut grass without a shirt on or something, I will get these welts. So in any case, I don't think about it so much, but walking barefoot is really good for you.
Yeah.
It really is good for you. There are tons of nerve endings in your feet. And there's a way of sort of gripping the earth with your toes that walking barefoot provides. And just remembering to do that once in a while is a way of reconnecting, feeling more integrated. And I guess, see, this is where our language breaks down again, because integration implies you've got two things that need to come together, and it's just one thing. It's more about needing to understand that it's just one thing, instead of having this artificial divide within ourselves.
Yeah. I think a topic that we should come back to related to bodies, coming back again to the body, our body images, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is our body? And that ties back in. We did an episode a few months back on relationship with food, but the coming back to our worth, you know, tying in our self-worth and tying in all kinds of things into that, I think is worth returning to. For today, though, we've gone through a lot.
Yeah.
It's a good introduction.
I agree. I think it's a good start for the conversation. The whole idea of the sacralization of the physical is a very central topic to modern paganism. And it's one of those things that is so far out of step with the cultures that surround us that it's a little bit hard to grasp. You sort of reach for it, and sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. So I do think that it would be good for us to address specifically body image stuff, mm-hmm. because, you know, people who want to be happy have to be lined up on their own side, mm-hmm. rather than filled with internal conflict. And that's what we want for you, listeners. We want you to be happy and effective and to be able to do the things in the world that are important to you. So that's why we talk about this stuff. Now, what we haven't talked about this time at all, and I'll just touch on it really briefly, is using ritual, mm-hmm. to address, you know, feeling of discord or of separation between the self and the body. And I'm just going to kind of put a pin in that rather than go into suggestions of how you can do that. I'm sure you can come up with your own ideas of how to do that. And, you know, the wonderful bubble bath is certainly an example. But when we do the body image episode, we'll talk more about ritual approaches to that kind of integration.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll give some specific examples and ways to build those rituals.
Yeah.
So yeah,
for sure. Well, thank you, Yucca.
Thanks
for
Mark.
Another great conversation.
All right. See you next week.
Okay, take care.